And now the game where we invite on those who've done memorable things to do something they'd rather forget. Doug Glanville was an all-star outfielder with the Cubs and Phillies and Rangers, and he succeeded despite a terrible handicap, something he sometimes had to keep secret. Fact is, Doug Glanville, pro baseball player, is really smart. The Ivy League graduate is now a businessman here in Chicago. He's a columnist as well for the New York Times Online. Doug Glanville, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
This is true, though. You're an Ivy League graduate, University of Pennsylvania, with a degree in engineering, right?
Yes.
And yet you succeeded in professional athletics. You're such a heartwarming story in that way.
Well, baseball's physics.
Yeah, I know.
I just had my calculator in my back pocket every time I went to hit.
Really?
Whatever it takes.
You Poindexter, you. Well, was this actually difficult for you? Because, I mean, a lot of baseball players don't go to college. But was it actually tricky? Did they make fun of you?
I think it was tougher in the minor leagues, actually, because now you're in the middle of the heartland, and you're trying to make it, and nobody knows where you are, and they're wondering why I'm reading, you know, the book on, you know, the African history or something like that. So,
right.
What do you read at the beach?
Us Weekly.
There you go. As far as anyone's concerned, Bennett.
Keeping it real.
I remember they used to say about Mo Berg, who was the very educated guy, said he could speak seven languages and couldn't hit in any of them. I don't want to be too jokey about this, but is it a disadvantage to be too smart about baseball? I mean, can you overthink the game?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, I love baseball partly because that was my refuge where I can relax and not really think too much. I mean, my brother taught me the game. I could kind of go blank out there and just play, hit the ball, see the ball, hit the ball. Unfortunately, when you get your mind a little too involved, you can kind of work yourself out in knots. You're trying to figure out what the pitcher's doing. You hear the popcorn guy asking for, soda, and that's something's wrong with that, obviously. You're talking to the peanut guy. So that's when you're getting in trouble, when you're actually hearing everything going around you.
That's actually a question I wanted to ask, because these modern baseball stadiums, there are as many as 50,000 people there. How in the world do you concentrate on what you're doing, surrounded by all those people, many of whom are letting you know how much they hate you?
Well, you ever notice the helmets have two ear flaps?
Really?
Yeah. That's what helps. You just muffle everything and hope you don't hear anything.
Like a Bose baseball helmet.
Absolutely. Yeah. Can I patent that, actually? My engineering degree might help me.
Noise cancellation sports equipment.
Do you get used to it? Is it just something that in a lifetime of athletic competition you just get used to just being in front of so many people, or is it
it's still tough. I mean, you start to have fun with it. When I was in Philadelphia, my senior thesis for college, I went to Penn in Philly, so when I got traded to Philadelphia, they were ready for me. They'd looked at my bio. They followed my resume. So, I'm in the outfield one day, and they knew my thesis was about designing a stadium at 30th Street Station. So,
right, in Philadelphia.
Yeah, they were like, oh, this is cool. So one month in early in the season, April, I didn't hit very well. I was hitting like 180 to start the season. So one of the fans yelled at me. He said, "Hey, Glanville, why don't you design a stadium you can hit in?"
That's pretty good.
And that is an NPR listener.
There you go. Sometimes players seem to get upset, though. Sometimes players seem to get exercised a little bit about the fans.
I've seen a couple crazy things. I've seen a few players end up in the stands.
Really?
It does happen, and it's probably not a good idea since it's one on 50,000.
Right.
So your odds are not really that good.
Yeah, but you have a bat, though. That must help.
You have a bat, yeah.
One of the things you've written about so well in your New York Times Online column, which has just been great, because, generally speaking, you athletes don't talk much about, being who you are. It's a very closed world, it seems. You don't want to reveal a lot. But you talk a lot about the actual terror and pressure of being a pro athlete. Is that typical? You mean all those guys who look so cool, they're really kind of terrified or excited or angry or whatever?
Yeah, we're that 12-year-old kid just screaming at the bus going by, basically
inside.
So we're, it's one of those secrets, I guess, to some degree that I'm trying to share with the world writing. I mean, there's no question that you have to keep that exterior. You have to be in the bubble so you can perform well and be someone in control. But, deep down, performing every day, 162 games a year, it does start to wear on you, and you're aware of the magnitude of the people watching you.
There is something kind of appealing about the idea of a touchy-feely sort of new baseball world, where if you strike out, you just sort of drop to your knees and weep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just let it out. Just cry it out.
Yeah, that would be good. And then you start getting sponsors by Kleenex.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that's fine.
Various, no, like... The makers of Valium, Prozac, or pharmaceuticals. Sure. All right, some baseball geekery questions. One thing I've always wondered, you get a single, you get a walk, you get to first base. The guys on the opposite teams always talk to the first baseman. You're always a little chatting. There's a little chatting. What are you guys chatting about?
Yeah, you know, how's the baby? You know, how's everybody doing? Most of the time, if you have to think of it this way, if you get a hit, you're feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
So you're willing to talk to anybody, you know.
So, I mean, you're out there and you're saying to the opposing first baseman, you see that? Yeah. I just knocked that right over his head, man. I'm good.
Yeah, absolutely. And, and then, of course, sometimes the official score, you're not sure if it's a hit or an error.
Yeah.
And you don't want to look like you're kind of being selfish and checking the scoreboard to see if the guy scored a hit.
Yeah.
So you kind of, you know, look at the first baseman and say, hey, what'd he give you, man? What'd he give me? What'd he score? Okay, yeah, that's cool. And then you look like you're, let's go, team, let's go, because you got a hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You also, you've said very nice things about umpires, which seems contrary to what we'd expect.
Right. Well, I'm trying to share the love out there.
Yeah, you're trying to share the love.
You know, these guys, and what people don't realize is coming up in the minor leagues, when you're trying to make it to the major leagues, you actually are side by side with developing umpires.
Right, you're so, all coming up together.
Yeah, so you're eating in the flea-bitten hotel together. You're doing whatever it takes to make it, and once you get to the big leagues, you see the same guy. So I just gave a shout-out, and I heard from some umpires. It was a wonderful feedback, and I'm glad that they are, didn't turn out to be the bad guys all the
time. Right. Did you ever get thrown out of a game? Did you ever get into altercation with an umpire?
I did not, actually. But in the minor leagues, I charged the mound.
Did you really?
Yeah, and I actually predicted it because the guy hit a home run off the pitcher. He was frustrated, so they threw the next ball at my head. And, I ran out there, and then halfway there, I realized, you know what? I haven't been in a whole lot of fights.
All right. You're like, oh, I'm going to get him. And you're running out, and you're like, wait a minute, I'm an engineering major from UPenn.
Someone call time out.
What did you do?
Well, I ducked my head, and I was waiting for the rest of my team to get there.
So, as they are supposed to do, according to baseball etiquette.
After I was put in a full Nelson by the wrestling high school phenomenon, that was the catcher of the opposing team.
Right.
That was it. I was pretty much face down and waiting.
But you got some points. he charged the mound. Yeah. He's a hothead.
Yeah,
you know.
Don't mess with Glanville.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right, Doug Glanville. We're so glad to have you here. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
And That's the Way It Is, or Was.
As everyone knows, legendary newsman Walter Cronkite passed away last weekend at the age of 92. We thought we would pay tribute to him in our own way by asking you three questions about the less well-known aspects of his long and interesting life. Answer two questions correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice, on their home answering machine. So, Carl, who is Doug Glanville playing for?
Doug is playing for Mike Savini of San Jose, California.
Ready to go?
All right, Mike.
First question. Unlike his 1960s rivals Huntley and Brinkley, Cronkite worked alone as the anchor of the evening news, but he didn't always go solo. When he hosted the CBS Morning News, he was partnered with whom, among others? A puppet called Charlemagne the Lion, B, Johnny the Barking News Seal, or C, blonde bombshell and, quote, glamour correspondent Mamie Van Doren.
Was I born at this time? I don't know.
You were not born.
I was not born, so I got a free pass for getting this wrong.
Right.
So I will say C.
You're going to say C, Mamie Van Doren. She was, of course, the Anna Nicole Smith of her day, if you will.
Absolutely.
Did she think she'd know? Sadly, no. He actually worked with a puppet called Charlemagne the Lion. A little lion with a crown. It was an attempt to compete with NBC's Today Show, which was co-hosted by a chimpanzee named J. Fred Muggs.
Wow.
Thank God television has gotten a lot more classy since then. Now, it wouldn't be co-hosted by a chimpanzee. It would be hosted by a chimpanzee.
Exactly.
All right, you still have two more chances here.
Two more.
This is two more strikes. This is two more pitches.
That's it.
Three strikes.
No problem.
Next question. During his lengthy career, he acquired many nicknames. One of them was Uncle Walter. What was another nickname for Walter Cronkite? Was it A, the Eyebrows of Doom, B, Old Iron Pants, or C, Sex Machine?
Let's see. Let me hear A again.
You're going to hear A again. It was the Eyebrows of Doom.
Wow, that is pretty fitting.
Yeah. Old Iron Pants or Sex Machine?
I'm going to say the Eyebrows of Doom.
You're going to say the Eyebrows of Doom?
Just because I like it.
You like the Eyebrows of Doom?
It's a great video game, Doom.
You're just going to go with that?
Well, I'm trying to get him on my voicemail.
I know. You're not playing for yourself. This is a charity game.
Can I change my answer?
You may change your answer.
Can I try B?
Yes, you may. Old Iron Pants.
All right.
You assume he was called this for the way he could just man that anchor chair for hours at a time. Old Iron Pants Cronkite. Last question, and this is for all the marbles. Among the many plaudits and honors Cronkite received in his life was which of these? A, in a 1974 Playgirl magazine poll, he was named as having the, quote, sexiest voice ever. B, in Holland, they call, for a while anyway, they called news anchors, quote, Cronkites. Or C, the North American Mustache Association newsletter used him as their cover model a record 8 times.
You know, I think it'd be very flattering to be called a Cronkite.
You think so? Is that your choice?
That's my choice.
You're right! Well done! This is back in the 60s. This is back in the 60s when TV news was relatively new, and you could tune in your house in Rotterdam, or in Sweden, by the way, and you would watch the Cronkites read the news. Very good. Carl, how did Doug Glanville do in our quiz?
Oh, Doug batted 2 for 3, Peter, and that's good enough to win for Mike Savini.
Whoa!
Nice! All right.
Doug Glanville is a contributing columnist on baseball to the opinion page of nytimes.com, newyorktimes.com, and he has the best career batting average of any New York Times columnist.
Well, that's because Maureen Dowd throws like a girl.
I do. Doug, thank you so much for joining us on White Wait, That's On Me. What a pleasure to have you. Doug Glanville, ladies and gentlemen. Take me.